Chapter 5. To him, while they passed their time in all manner of diversions the plus would afford them, as hunting, feasting, and visiting the island, the king of Mahila made a descent, and alarmed the whole country. Miss Sun advised the queen's brother not to give him any impediment, but let him get into the heart of the island, and he would take care to intercept their return. But the prince answered, should he follow his advice the enemy would do him, and the subjects an irreparable damage, in destroying the cocoa walks, and for that reason he must endeavor to stop his progress. Upon this answer he asked the English who were not under his command, if they were willing to join him in repelling the enemies of their common host, and one and all consenting, he gave them arms, and mixed them with his own men, and about the same number of Jahannians, under the command of Caraccioli and the queen's brother, and arming out all his boats, he went himself to the westward of the island, where they made their descent. The party which went by land, fell in with, and beat the Mahilians with great ease, who were in the greatest consternation, to find their retreat cut off by Miss Sun's boats. The Jahannians, whom they had often molested, were so enraged, that they gave quarter to none, and out of 300 who made the descent, if Miss Sun and Caraccioli had not interposed, not a soul had escaped. 113 were taken prisoners by his men, and carried on board his ships. These he sent straight to Mahila, with a message to the king, to desire he would make peace with his friend, and ally the king of Johanna. But that prince, little affected with the service done him in the preservation of his subjects, sent him word he took laws from none, and knew when to make war and peace without his advice, which he neither asked nor wanted. Miss Sun, irritated by this rude answer, resolved to transfer the war into his own country, and accordingly set sail for Mahila, with about 100 Johanna men. The shore, on sight of the ships, was filled with men, to hinder a descent if intended, but the great guns soon dispersed this rabble, and under their cover he landed the Jahannians, and an equal number of French and English. They were met by about 700 Mahilians, who pretended to stop their passage, but their darts and arrows were of little avail against Miss Sun's fusils. The first discharge made a great slaughter, and about 20 shells which were thrown among them, put them to a confused flight. The party of Europeans and Jahannians then marched to their metropolis, without resistance, which they reduced to ashes, and the Jahannians cut down all the cocoa walks that they could for the time, for towards evening they returned to their ships, and stood off to sea. At their return to Johanna the queen made a festival, and magnified the bravery and service of her guests, friends, and allies. This feast lasted 4 days, at the expiration of which time the queen's brother proposed to Captain Miss Sun the making another descent, in which he would go in person, and did not doubt subjecting the Mahilians. But this was not the design of Miss Sun, who had thoughts of fixing a retreat on the northwest side of Madagascar, and looked upon the feuds between these two islands advantageous to his views, and therefore no way his interest, to suffer the one to overcome the other. For while the variance was kept up, and their forces pretty much upon a level, it was evident their interest would make both sides caress him. He therefore answered, that they ought to deliberate on the consequences, for they might be deceived in their hopes, and find the conquest less easy than they imagined. That the king of Mahila would be more upon his guard, and not only entrench himself, but gall them with frequent ambuscades, by which they must inevitably lose a number of men, and, if they were forced to retire with loss, raise the courage of the Mahilians, and make them irreconcilable enemies to the Jahannians, and utterly deprive him of the advantages with which he might now make a peace, having twice defeated them. That he could not be always with them, and that his leaving Johanna he might expect the king of Mahila would endeavor to take a bloody revenge for the late damages. The queen gave utterly into Miss Sun's sentiments. While this was in agitation, 4 Mahilians arrived as ambassadors to propose a peace. They finding the Jahannians upon high terms, one of them spoke to this purpose, O ye Jahannians, do not conclude from your late success that fortune will be always favorable. She will not always give you the protection of the Europeans, and without their help it's possible you might now sue for a peace, which you seem averse to. Remember, the sun rises, comes to its meridian height, and stays not there, but declines in a moment. Let this admonish you to reflect on the constant revolution of all sublunary affairs, and the greater is your glory, the nearer you are to your declension. We are taught by everything we see, that there is no stability in the world, but nature is in continual movement. The sea, which o'erflows the sands, has its bounds set, which it cannot pass, which the moment it has reached, without abiding, returns back to the bottom of the deep. Every herb, every shrub and tree, and even our own bodies, teach us this lesson, that nothing is durable, or can be counted upon. Time passes away insensibly, one sun follows another, and brings its changes with it. Today's globe of light sees you strengthened by these Europeans elate with victory, and we, who have been used to conquer you, come to ask a peace. Tomorrow's sun may see you deprived of your present succors, and the Jahannians petitioning us. As therefore we cannot say what tomorrow may bring forth, it would be unwise on uncertain hopes to forego a certain advantage, as surely peace ought to be esteemed by every wise man. Having said this, the ambassadors withdrew, and were treated by the queen's orders. After the council had concluded, they were again called upon, and the queen told them, that by the advice of her good friends, the Europeans, and those of her council, she agreed to make a peace, which she wished might banish all memory of former injuries, that they must own the war was begun by them, and that she was far from being the aggressor. She only defended herself in her own kingdom, which they had often invaded, though, till within few days, she had never molested their coasts. If then they really desired to live amicably with her, they must resolve to send 2 of the king's children, and 10 of the first nobility, as hostages, that they might, when they pleased, return, for that was the only terms on which she would desist prosecuting the advantages she now had, with the utmost vigor. The ambassadors returned with this answer, and, about 10 days after, the 2 ships appearing upon their coasts, they sent off to give notice, that their king complied with the terms proposed, would send the hostages, and desired a cessation of all hostility, and, at the same time, invited the commanders on shore. The Jahanna men on board, dissuaded their accepting the invitation. But Miss Sun and Caraccioli, fearing nothing, went, but armed their boat's crew. They were received by the king with demonstrations of friendship, and they dined with him under a tamarind tree. But when they parted from him, and were returning to their boats, they were enclosed by, at least, 100 of the Mahilians, who set upon them with the utmost fury, and, in the first flight of arrows, wounded both the captains, and killed 4 of their boat's crew of 8, who were with them. They, in return, discharged their pistols with some execution, and fell in with their cutlasses. But all their bravery would have stood them in little stead, had not the report of their pistols alarmed, and brought the rest of their friends to their assistance, who took their fusils, and coming up while they were engaged, discharged a volley on the back of the assailants, which laid 12 of them dead on the spot. The ships hearing this fire, sent immediately the yawls and longboats well manned. Though the islanders were a little damped in their courage by this fire of the boat's crew, yet they did not give over the fight, and one of them desperately threw himself upon Caraccioli, and gave him a deep wound in his side, with a long knife, but he paid for the rashness of the attempt with his life, one of the crew cleaving his skull. The yawls and longboats now arrived, and being guided by the noise, reinforced their companions, put the traitors to flight, and brought off their dead and wounded. The Europeans lost by this treachery 7 slain outright, and 8 wounded, 6 of which recovered. The crew were resolved to revenge the blood of their officers and comrades the next day, and were accordingly on the point of landing, when 2 canoes came off with 2 men bound, the pretended authors of this treason, without the king's knowledge, who had sent them, that they might receive the punishment due to their villainy. The Johanna men on board were called for interpreters, who, having given this account, added that the king only sacrificed these men, but that they should not believe him, for he certainly had given orders for assassinating the Europeans, and the better way was to kill all the Mahilians that came in the canoes as well as the two prisoners. Go back to Johanna, take more of their countrymen, and give no peace to traitors. But Miss Sun was for no such violent measures. He was averse to everything that bore the face of cruelty and thought a bloody revenge, if necessity did not enforce it, spoke a groveling and timid soul. He, therefore, sent those of the canoes back, and bid them tell their king, if before the evening he sent the hostages agreed upon, he should give credit to his excuse, but if he did not, he should believe him the author of the late vile attempt on his life. The canoes went off, but returned not with an answer, wherefore, he bid the Johanna men tell the two prisoners, that they should be set on shore the next morning, and ordered them to acquaint their king, he was no executioner, to put those to death whom he had condemned, but that he should find, he knew how to revenge himself of his treason. The prisoners being unbound, threw themselves at his feet, and begged that he would not send them ashore, for they should be surely put to death. For the crime they had committed was the dissuading the barbarous action of which they were accused as authors. Next day the two ships landed 200 men, under the cover of their cannon, but that precaution of bringing their ships close to the shore they found needless. Not a soul appearing, they marched 2 leagues up the country, when they saw a body of men appear behind some shrubs. Caraccioli's lieutenant, who commanded the right wing, with 50 men made up to them, but found he had got among pitfalls artificially covered, several of his men falling into them, which made him halt, and not pursue those Mahilians who made a faint retreat to ensnare him, thinking it dangerous to proceed farther, and seeing no enemy would face them, they retired the same way they came, and getting into their boats, went on board the ships, resolving to return with a strong reinforcement, and make descents at one and the same time in different parts of the island. They asked the two prisoners how the country lay, and what the soil was on the north side of the island, and they answered it was morass, and the most dangerous part to attempt, it being a plus, where they shelter on any imminent danger. The ships returned to Johanna, where the greatest tenderness and care was shown for the recovery and cure of the two captains, and of their men. They lay 6 weeks, before they were able to walk the decks, for neither of them would quit his ship. Their Johanna wives expressed a concern they did not think them capable of. Nay, a wife of one of the wounded men who died, stood some time looking upon the corpse as motionless as a statue, then embracing it, without shedding a tear, desired she might take it ashore to wash and bury it, and at the same time, by an interpreter, and with a little mixture of European language, she had begged her late husband's friends would take their leave of him the next day. Accordingly a number went ashore, and carried with them the dividend, which fell to his share, which the captain ordered, to be given his widow. When she saw the money, she smiled, and asked if all that was for her. Being answered in the affirmative, and what good will all that shining dirt do me, if I could with it purchase the life of my husband, and call him back from the grave, I would accept it with pleasure, but as it is not sufficient to lure him back to this world, I have no use for it. Do with it what you please. Then she desired they would go with her, and perform the last ceremonies to her husband's dead body, after their country fashion, lest he should be displeased, that she could not stay with them, to be a witness, because she was in haste to go, and be married again. She startled the Europeans who heard this latter part of her speech so dissonant from the beginning. However, they followed her, and she led them into a plantain walk, where they found a great many Johanna men and women, sitting under the shade of plantains, round the corpse, which lay, as they all said, on the ground, covered with flowers. She embraced them round, and then the Europeans, one by one, and after these ceremonies, she poured out a number of bitter imprecations against the Mahilla men, whose treachery had darkened her husband's eyes, and made him insensible of her caresses, who was her first love, to whom she had given her heart, with her virginity. She then proceeded in his praises, calling him the joy of infants, the love of virgins, the delight of the old, and the wonder of the young, adding, he was strong, and beautiful as the cedar, brave as the bull, tender as the kid, and loving as the ground turtle. Having finished this oration, not unlike those of the Romans, which the nearest relation of the Decius adduced to pronounce from the rostrum, she laid her down by the side of her husband, embracing him, and sitting up again, gave herself a deep wound under the left breast with a bayonet, and fell dead on her husband's corpse. The Europeans were astonished at the tenderness and resolution of the girl, for she was not, by what her mien spoke her, past 17. And they now admired, as much as they had secretly detested her, for saying she was in haste to be married again, the meaning of which they did not understand. After the husband and wife were buried, the crew returned on board, and gave an account of what had passed. The captain's wives, for Miss Sun and his were on board the Bijouts, the name they had given their prize from her mate, and Gilding, seemed not in the least surprised, and Caraccioli's lady only said, she must be of noble descent, for none but the families of the nobility had the privilege allowed them of following their husbands on pain, if they transgressed, of being thrown into the sea, to be eat by fish. And they knew that their souls could not rest as long as any of the fish who fed upon them lived. Miss Sun asked if they intended to have done the same thing had they died. We should not, answered his wife, have disgraced our families, nor is our tenderness for our husbands inferior to hers whom you seem to admire. After their recovery, Miss Sun proposes a cruise on the coast of Zanguebar, which being agreed to, he and Caraccioli took leave of the queen and her brother, and would have left their wives on the island, but they could by no means be induced to the separation. It was in vain to urge the shortness of the time they were to cruise. They answered it was farther than Mahilla they intended to go, and if they were miserable in that short absence, they could never support a longer, and if they would not allow them to keep them company the voyage, they must not expect to see them at their return, if they intended one. In a word, they were obliged to yield to them, but told them, if the wives of their men should insist as strongly on following their example, their tenderness would be their ruin, and make them a prey to their enemies. They answered the queen should prevent that, by ordering no woman should go on board, and if any were in the ships, they should return on shore. This order was accordingly made, and they set sail for the river of Mozambique. In about 10 days' cruise, after they had left Johanna, and about 15 leagues to the eastward of this river, they fell in with a stout Portuguese ship of 60 guns, which engaged them from break of day till 2 in the afternoon, when the captain being killed, and a great number of men lost, she struck. This proved a very rich prize, for she had the value of 250,050 sterling on board, in gold dust. The two women never quitted the decks all the time of the engagement, neither gave they the least mark of fear, except for their husbands. This engagement cost them 30 men, and Caraccioli lost his right leg. The slaughter fell mostly on the English, for of the above number, 20 were of that nation. The Portuguese lost double the number. Caraccioli's wound made them resolve to make the best of their way for Johanna, where the greatest care was taken of their wounded, not one of whom died, though their number amounted to 27. Caraccioli kept his bed 2 months, but Miss Sun, seeing him in a fair way of recovery, took what hands could be spared from the Bijouts, leaving her sufficient for defense, and went out, having mounted 10 of the Portuguese guns, for he had hitherto carried but 30, though he had ports for 40. he stretched over to Madagascar and coasted along this island to the northward, as far as the most northerly point. When turning back, he entered a bay to the northward of Diego Suarez. He run 10 leagues up this bay, and on the larboard side found it afforded a large and safe harbor, with plenty of fresh water. He came here to an anchor, went ashore and examined into the nature of the soil, which he found rich, the air wholesome, and the country level. He told his men that this was an excellent place for an asylum, and that he determined here to fortify and raise a small town, and make docks for shipping, that they might have some place to call their own, and a receptacle, when age or wounds had rendered them incapable of hardship, where they might enjoy the fruits of their labor, and go to their graves in peace. That he would not, however, set about this, till he had the approbation of the whole company, and were he sure they would all approve this design, which he hoped, it being evidently for the general good, he should not think it advisable to begin any works, lest the natives should, in his absence, destroy them. But however, as they had nothing upon their hands, if they were of his opinion, they might begin to fall and square timber, ready for the raising a wooden fort, when they returned with their companions. The captain's motion was universally applauded, and in 10 days they felled and rough-hewed 150 large trees, without any Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.